You're listening to Back to the Light with J.D. Rieger. Hey everybody, welcome to yet another episode of Back to the Light. I am J.D. Rieger. Memphis friends, tickets are on sale now for my last and biggest show of the year, the Back to the Light Not Too Late Night Talk Show Holiday Spectacular. It's a night of Tonight Show-esque talk show fun with me as the host, plus extra special guests Steve Selvidge of the Hold Steady and Sons of Mudboy, Mark Edgar Stewart, Bailey Bigger, Josh Shaw of Black Hippie, chef comedian Josh McClain, pro wrestler Trace Lee Hunt, and house band the Paul to my Dave, if you will, Jason Pulley. What a show! It all goes down Thursday, December 8th at the Green Room in Crosstown Arts. You can get tickets and more info at crosstownarts.org. This week on the podcast, we're going back on location at Midtown Con for a deep conversation with the one and only Lawrence Matthews, the artist formerly known as Don Lifted. We cover a lot of territory here, his career, his state of mind, the name change. It's a really introspective and heartfelt moment, I think, that we shared, and I'm proud to release it into the world now. So let's get into it.
Yeah.
Lawrence, a.k.a. Don Lifted.
Yeah. FKA.
Why FKA? And get up on that mic.
Yeah. It's over. It's over. I'm moving forward as Lawrence Matthews, 100%.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So I just put the FKA.
I actually haven't.
Yeah.
No one told me.
Damn. Yeah, that's crazy. Can I cuss? Can I talk
about Yeah. Say whatever you want.
Yeah, I am transitioning, or I've completed the transition. I think me performing at the Shell was the, like, physical representation of that, and me moving on to something new, or just myself, moving on to being myself. I'd worked under Don Lifted for years and years and years, and I think I maximized it in all the ways that I wanted to or think that are possible for it as a project. And so now I'm just myself. And I'm going to be making music as myself, making films as myself. Just going to be doing that. So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Sorry to jump right to it. But yeah.
No. That's what we do. We don't. Yeah. No need to beat around the bush.
Yeah.
So, is the intent or the direction going to be any different than it would have been?
I think, so for me or whatever, and I think, like, that doesn't mean that, like, we can't still talk about Don Lifted stuff. Like, of course. Like, that's what I've been doing for the last 10 years or whatever. But, like, I think for me, I've been trying to, like, quote-unquote, end Don Lifted stuff for, like, since, like, 2014. Like, I had always had a plan of how I wanted to, like, release albums, do projects and stuff. And so it just stuff kept happening that made it so it did not end. And, like, life things were happening, life experiences were happening. So originally, I started doing shows across the street at Crosstown, the 430 space, 2013, 2014. And at the end of those three projects, I was supposed to end it and make another album that I've been essentially, like, theorizing for years and years and years at this point. But then, like, I didn't feel whole, like, I didn't feel completed in terms of, like, what that project was, like, what the December projects were. And so I was like, all right, I have more to say, like, what's going on? And then I made Alero. And then I was like, okay, I still have more to say. And I made Contour. And then at that point, I was like, all right, it's done. Like, I've told these stories that exist in this kind of, like, college-based, like, me younger, like, late teens, early 20s. And now at that point, it got into my mid-20s. And I was like, all right, like, I think I've kind of closed the door on what this is. I don't want to move on to something different. And then, I started recording music as Lawrence Matthews, started working on an album with I Make Mad Beats. And so I was over there with him working on records. And then I went on tour because I was like, hey, I'm finna end this thing. I want to do it properly. So I was like, let me go on tour as Don Lifted. went on tour to see people, you know, because streaming had become a thing before when I started. It was just CDs and hand-to-hand stuff.
I remember.
Yes, exactly. So it's like at a certain point, streaming became a thing. I got exposed to a lot of fans that were in other places, and those people were looking at me like I was a new artist. And so I was like, let me do a tour and let them know, hey, like, I'm glad you enjoy what I'm doing, but I'm closing the door on what this is, and I'm moving on to something else. Messed around and got signed. And then I had to put out an album as Done Lifted, and I tried when I got signed to be like, nah, I don't want to do that. And there was pushback, so I was like, all right, I'll do another Done Lifted album and just make sure I can like do it as well enough to where I can leverage my, I guess, like, I don't know, fame or whatever or success to be like, hey, I want to do this as Lawrence Matthews now. And so did that, released the project. We did pick up our option for the second album. So I was like free to kind of do whatever I wanted to do. And it just felt like so many things were like completing and coming into a whole, like coming into fruition. Like just everything was like leaning and finally forcing me in a direction of just existing as Lawrence Matthews after being Done Lifted for like a million, you know, years or whatever. And it just didn't feel like there was any future on it. It felt like I hit a glass ceiling on it. And I did. And I think the music that I've been making is very much different sonically. And to me now, like I look at Done Lifted the way to like, I don't know, like we know Radiohead, we know Thom Yorke, right? But we don't know if Radiohead is what Thom Yorke's brain is thinking all the time. It might just be Thom Yorke music, right? But he has a bunch of different bands. So it's like, it's an outlet for all these different spaces. And so for me, Done Lifted is an outlet for the things that I was expressing in that music. And I think the things that I'm expressing now in my music are even grander or wider than that. And I think I needed to just be myself to be able to do that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I was going to ask if you felt that there were things you could say, whether it was like content-wise or musically,
yeah,
that you could do as Lawrence Matthews that you can't do as Done Lifted.
100%. 100%, because I think like Done Lifted is something I made and something I created that has its own rules and its own structures and it has its own purpose. And so it's like once I closed the door on that purpose, it felt unnecessary to continue it. And I kept feeling that at every point of completion, but then it would be like a little bit more left, a little bit more left, a little bit more left. And I think for me, this year and last year and the releasing of like 325i, like I work in threes. And so I did three December projects as Done Lifted, like free albums that I put out, like CDs and stuff. And then I did three, you know, trilogy, like car albums. I did three car albums and that was the end of that. And after that, I didn't feel like anything was left to tell. Like my cousin put it he put it into words like better than I can, but he was like, Done Lifted was you finding who you were. And now that you found who you are, you can just be yourself. And that's like when I listen back to the music and look at the discography and the things I was doing, it was me just trying to figure it out. Like it was me searching, trying to find understanding for the things that I experienced in life, good or bad, and just trying to like put that together and rationalize it as like a young guy, like growing up or whatever. And now like I'm 31 now, I just turned 31. But like when I turned 30, it was like, it was a shift that happened. It had already been building. So it's like at the same time as Done Lifted was building and understanding and growth, it was like I was building to Lawrence, essentially. And I hadn't been Lawrence, quote unquote, I mean, since I got to college or whatever, you know, it was myself, and then I started making music, and you feel like you have to be a thing, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Are you still going to be working with Fat Possum as Lawrence Matthews?
We'll see. Because, I mean, I'm down. Like, we are technically working together right now, so the album that I'm making that's coming out maybe in the next few years or next year, we'll see. I'm not going to tell nobody right now. But the album that I've been working on samples a ton of Fat Possum catalog, and I started theorizing that record while I was there.
Like the blue stuff?
Blue stuff, soul stuff, black folk music and things like that. All the samples, nearly all the samples on the album are pulling from Fat Possum's catalog or High Records. And so that was something I was telling him about while I was working, you know, on the label.
Man, that really opens up a cool, like, having that High Records catalog at your disposal. That's cool.
Yeah, and so for me, I always was a sampler. Like 325i, we didn't sample besides one song. Like I learned to produce like Dre. Like Dre, unfortunately, Kanye is a terrible name right now. But, you know, Dr. Dre is like, that's my ultimate producer, right? And the way that he flips samples and live instrumentation and all these things. And I just never had access to both in that way. And so through my career, I was able to, you know, get that now. So I can sample and have musicians play and sing and rap over it and do these things. And so the music that we're making right now, or just finished, the album's done. But I'm still working on an album after that. It's much more maximalist in all the ways that I've never been able to, you know, express myself as Don Lifted. Like Don Lifted is very much like, I describe it to people, it's like your conscience. It's like that inner voice in your head working, like helping you, coaching you through, or just trying to find the answers to what you're going through in life. And it seems to know a little bit more than you do, but not all the answers, so you still bump your head a lot. That's what I wanted Don Lifted music to sound like. And over time, that's kind of what it became. And I like perfected it. And maybe I got like this weird thing when I like figure something out and it becomes a formula, I don't want to do it anymore. And I had finally figured it out. And I was like, oh, like this is what this is. And I like to be challenged. And so, yeah, I mean, life was challenging making 325i, but the making of it, I don't know, like it was easier. Like, it was much easier. If it wouldn't have been 2020 and the pandemic and all this other stuff, I probably would have been able to make the album much faster, but I was so stressed out, and I just let that feed into the album. But, yeah, I don't know if it would have been that hard of a process otherwise, because I had figured out what Don Lifted was and what a Don Lifted song sounds like and what the subject matter is and what the aesthetic is. So it was just a different vibe.
You know, it's interesting to me that, you know, changing names is also intentionally sort of, you know, a move towards more creative freedom. Because yeah. It seems to me like, I mean, I listened to 325i yesterday at the shop, and I mean, it's not like a by the numbers Memphis rap album or anything like that. No. I mean, you're already covering a lot of territory just within Don Lifted. So to take that even further, that's...
Oh, just you wait. Like, I keep telling people, like, and I've never been one to pat myself on the back. Like, you've maybe heard me, like, overlap in other conversations, like, you know, with other people. Like, I am very self-critical, like, about what I got going on, because I don't feel like a natural musician like that. I've had to learn, like, every single thing that I wanted to do, every step of the way, and, like, have... like gone from sucky in so many, like sucky in engineering, sucky in recording, sucky in this, sucky in that, to being in a space where like people think that I'm good at what I do, right? And like I know where I am, but I'm always trying to grow. And so I never feel like I've like arrived at something. And so with Don Lifted again, like I felt like I had figured it out and I was like, I don't do this anymore. And so with what I'm working on now, it's very much like I'm trying to push myself in a certain way and then continuing to push on the next thing. But I feel like I got to a space where it was like, oh, like this is crazy shit. This isn't like, I'm not second guessing this at all. Like I don't have any doubts about what I've recorded and what's sitting on my hard drive at home. I know it's like the best thing that I've ever made in every sense of the way. And I also think like I keep like saying this, but like I think if it's treated the right way and we navigate it the right way, it can be one of the most important Southern bodies of work since like Southern Playlisted Cadillac Music. Like that level of intention, that like, or just like cultural importance. Like if the energy can be put behind it, the resources, the support, the finances, like which I'm gathering all right now, it can be monumental, because I think the intersections of the story being told and the sonic palette of what it is something that has not been done in a long time, but it's intersected with things that maybe have never been done. And I think that is where like culturally shifting, artistically poignant things really like exist, is in that intersection between what feels good in our spirit and is familiar, but something that's fresh and new and like innovative. And I don't, you know, I think the South is producing a lot of dope stuff, and I think the South has like a lot of like cultural footprint on music all over the place sonically, right? Like in production and so many things. But like it's been a minute since we were like looking at the South for like, okay, like think about Lil Wayne and like the things he was able to do, and like T.I. and Ludacris and like these types of artists, Andre 3000, Outkast, like UGK, like these folks were like influencing in a way where like people were like, oh, they're just not Southern dudes. Like there's something cultural happening there. Whereas like right now, I feel like we have those moments, but it's like we're not hitting all the points, like all the like the elements, right? Like of what hip hop is or what rap is. And like for me, I'm trying to advance not only the sonics, the production of what we're doing, but the engineering of what we're doing and how that's approached. But then also like the rapping and the writing and like just being really technically proficient and like advanced in that way. Like I'm trying to push all of it and really challenge myself. Like I have one song on the album where I sing. Everything else is rap.
You know, this is also interesting to me because in music and pop culture, so many people just try to lock in on one thing, refine it till it's just like down to its essence, and then just keep delivering it until like they're excused from the table.
Yes.
But you know, still relatively speaking, like you could still grow Don Lifted to the Moon, you know, like there's a lot,
yeah,
you know,
in
from
theory,
from like a fame perspective.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Maybe not artistically.
And so that's the thing, like for me, like I really believe all this stuff is like spiritual and like connected in all these other ways, and like what's happened now has already happened, and it's like there's a version of me and you that exists in the future currently right now, along with our baby selves. Like there's like all this stuff. It's like time is not linear in that way. And I feel like Don Lifted stuff is made to stay where it was. Like I don't think it ever was going to be this big, like crazy thing. I don't see it. Like I saw it at different points and I aspired to it, but I knew the rules I was making. I knew the decisions I was making in the studio. I knew what type of music I was making, and I knew that it was contained in a certain way. And I knew the decisions that Don Lifted was making as an artist for his art weren't ones that would lend to that, that would go in that direction. Like, I barely even wanted to sign a deal. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was like, this ain't what this is. This is an intimate, personal, therapeutic connection with fans and people, and it has to exist in that space. Like, the Shell Show, I don't know, it might have been maybe the most people that's ever been a show. I don't know, because I've done a few shows that were like the Crosstown Theater was a lot. Me and Healy did a show at Crosstown and like packed it out, and like it was a crazy amount of people in there. But, and it was dark in the Shell, so I couldn't see, but it felt like the biggest show I had ever done. And so in that, it felt the most like a show when I transitioned to Lawrence Matthews at the end of my Don Lifted set. Before that, it felt like not this stage is too big, but this environment is too big for this music. And then the music is still doing what it's supposed to do, because like I can perform or whatever, but I was like, this is for like me and 50 people in a round. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is for me in like the green room or something like that, where I can talk to people and interact with folks and like look people in their eyes a certain type of way, because there's emotion and stories in this music that are so personal that we have to have that personal connection. And like, if you put that in Coachella, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. To me, it doesn't work. Maybe other people would like to see it, but for me, it doesn't feel that same. Whereas like the music that I have on a new record, when I performed that, it was a completely different reaction that I haven't maybe seen since I was doing more rapping. And so it was like, oh no, this is for this. This is for a big stage. This is for the world. Whereas Don Lifted is like, yeah, it's for the world, but it's for the world and you in your bedroom with your headphones on, or you in your car, or you after a rough day at work, or an argument with your partner, or whatever it is. It has a space and a time to exist. And the stuff I'm working on right now exists in all time. And that's like how I really feel about it. And I want to push that as far as I would like for it to go. You know what I'm saying? Because I always have my limits for where I want things to go. Like, I'm not trying to be... I want to maintain my space and my privacy and my security. And you can't do that after a certain point as an artist. And I don't want to go to that level. And if it takes me there, I'll deal with it. But I'm not intentionally trying to do that. But I think I've made records that have that potential, for sure. For sure.
You have a fairly recent single, as Don lifted, Baby Teeth.
Yeah, Baby Teeth. And so, like, Baby Teeth definitely was like, so Baby Teeth, we wrote, I mean, I wrote Baby Teeth before I even wrote 325i. So it was like early in the game. So it was like, I think we made four songs when I first like started getting courted by Fat Possum. It was Baby Teeth, Golden. Golden was the literal first song that I did with them. It was Golden, The Rope, Baby Teeth, and a song that's not gonna come out. And I just had it sitting for a while. And I remember like looking at the four songs and being like, what direction do I wanna go with this record? Like, I have a lot of energy in me right now because I was upset about a few different things. I was going through some stuff emotionally, but I also had like this story that I wanted to tell that was navigating like my gender expression and my queerness and like just how I showed up in the world, and then like all my anxieties around mortality and my like humanness. And so when I listened to all four of the songs, Golden felt like the one that gave me an album. And so I went with that direction. And then so it's so weird because, again, like we talk about time being linear or not being linear. I think about how The Rope shows up in the lyrics that I wrote in The Rope, and the things that I said in Baby Teeth were in 2019 or the early 2020 before like even the pandemic, right? And then when I listen to them now, because I listened to a few of the songs before I came in here just to refresh myself, and like I was hearing stuff in there that was like, this feels like prophetic in a way, like the things that I've experienced getting to where I am now and the things that you'll hear in the new record, it happened to just work as a perfect segue from the softness and like gentleness and like introspection that 325i was into what people may view as a more aggressive record, which is the next album under Lawrence Matthews. Like the Baby Teeth and The Rope kind of let you know that I am angry. The things have happened to me. And it's so crazy again because I wrote these things before, but I saw it coming. I saw what me getting a deal was finna do to my life. I saw like the status that I began to like gain and like the connections with people and the way that people were moving around me. I could start to see that this was finna cause some problems in my life, but I was like, all right, let me lock in and do this album. But, and I remember telling Patrick the A&R at Fat Possum, I was like, hey, I have an idea for an album. I know I'm finishing 325i right now, and I don't want you to think I'm getting ahead of myself, but there are things happening to me, and there's gonna be more things that happen to me that are gonna give you an album that is gonna sound like this. And so I was like, you know, that's when we got into sampling the catalog and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Do you wanna get into any of that stuff? I mean,
yeah. I'm down to talk about it. I think, like, I'll just say it like this. Nobody prepared me for being who I am in this moment. Nobody prepared me. Like, I had no OGs, no people who can, like, guide in different ways. Like, I mean, I have Jim Thompson who, like, can help me in different ways, but I don't always want to go to him because I feel like I'm like, I don't know. When you go to somebody who's, like, older and has more experience, you tell them all the shit that's stressing you out, they're kind of like, oh, that's fine. And, like, yeah. You feel like a baby. And so sometimes I feel that way, but I think, like, me becoming successful, you know, quote unquote, to other people and like having certain opportunities, like you get a lot of enemies. You get like a lot of weird people moving around you. Like you lose friends, like you lose. Like that's a thing that like, I don't think, like, I mean, you hear people talk about it, musicians and rappers and stuff. They talk about like what this pursuit of this thing is.
Well, I mean, you literally have to leave your friends and family.
Yes.
At home and go do, you know, yes. Spread your shit around.
Yes, and you have to, like, and the resentments that are created just for existing as the thing, right? Because you could be just doing your thing. A person with fears, insecurities, all these different things that humans have, right? And you're so focused on that, you're just trying to make your art. But there are people who are watching you and think that you have it all and think you have it together and think you have all the answers. And they wish they were you. They wish they had the same opportunities as you. Or because they can't get them, they look at you and go, well, this isn't legit. This isn't whatever. This is whatever. Like, he has support that we don't, like, blah, 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 blah. Or he's privileged in these ways. And it's like, yo, like, that's not what it is. But you'll never get to talk to that person. So it's interesting when those people were your friends. It's very interesting when those people were people who were in your house at different points. It's very interesting when those people might have been people you considered family, friends, loved ones, lovers. And so it's like when you have so many close personal betrayals and like switch ups and things that happen to you as you're pursuing the thing that you want to more than anything, it's really like crazy and it's really scary. It's very, you know, I dealt with horrible anxiety through 2020 all the way into this year, and like I'm much better now, but I mean, this summer I had stomach ulcers. I was having to take pills. I was like, had to switch my diet around, switched the way I was like I literally take cold showers and all this stuff now, which is super, super healthy. I don't know why they didn't have us taking cold showers from the beginning of existence, but it's the best thing in the world.
Huh.
It's the best thing in the world. Like, it helped my blood pressure, helped my stress, my anxiety. Like, it helped me in so many different ways. Like, I probably would not be alive in this way if it wasn't for, like, something as simple as cold showers.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. But, I think for me, people, like they say, like it's like, oh, money don't change you, it changed the people around you. And it's like, I don't even have money like that. And I'm like, damn, if I don't have money like that and this is causing this much strife in my life, I cannot imagine what it'll be later down the line. But the thing is, later
Memphis
down the line.
Memphis is kind of a small town, man.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, we have a lot of big idea, you know, we got an NBA team and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It seems like a big city, but
it's not.
Especially in our creative circles.
Not at all.
When somebody gets something that everybody else is wanting.
Yep. And the thing is, like, I am not sitting from some elevated standpoint like I know every damn thing or I'm just, like, so enlightened. I was 22 and jealous of the homie who got a deal. I was 22, 23, 24 and was looking at the other guys who had stuff going on and being like, why are they getting it? Why they're not that special. I'm better than them. I'm more talented, blah, 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 blah. And you make all these reasons and these excuses. Now, I never took it so far as to try to harm nobody or try to take advantage of nobody or infiltrate anybody's life or, you know, lie on people or spread rumors about people. I never did none of that. But it doesn't say that the next man or woman will, you know what I'm saying, or won't. And so, like, for me, that's the thing that I've been, like, learning is, like, the reason why it won't happen to me in the future is because I'm closing in. And, like, I had to really, like, isolate a lot. And I'm outside now, but most of the year I spent away. Like, I just spent away not hiding, but just, like, trying to heal, get my mind right, and protect myself because my anxiety and paranoia, and it's not even paranoia, I was right. Like, the people who were around me in various contexts were not for me at all. And the more that you gain, it's like I tell people about this, like, people can play, like, they can keep a mask on for so long. It's like fitting, it's Halloween. People can put a mask on for so long, and they can pretend that they love you and that they're your friend or they got good intentions with you and they want your success and stuff. But it's like, after a while, cracks start to show. It starts in little comments and things. Oh, you getting it now, ain't you? Like, little stuff like that, like, oh, you know, you the one with all the money, you the blah, 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 blah. Or you famous, ain't you? Blah, blah, blah. Like, people start saying these little things, little passive-aggressive kind of microaggressions. And it starts there, and the more time...
And it's all based in insecurity on their own part.
It's all based in insecurity. It's all based in insecurity.
I've been on both sides of it.
Yeah, same, same. I've been on both sides of it. And so for me, again, I'm not some judgmental person. I understand it. I just didn't let it consume me.
Yeah.
And I had to grow in a way where the next man or woman's success has nothing to do with me. I have my own path and my own life. But most of us, because of social media, think that we're all connected in that way. And because this person got something, and it's a small town thing, like, too. It's like a small town thing. It's like, there's only so much, you know.
Yeah.
There's only so many spots. And the truth is, the way that certain stuff is navigated here, yeah, it is only so much, you know. But that doesn't mean that the world, life is bigger than Memphis, Tennessee. You know, it has to be. And I think when you don't think that way, you'll kill the next man to make sure that he doesn't have it, have something. And we've seen that happen. You know, like, we've seen that happen. Like, little poop-putt, nobody dudes taking Young Dolph off this earth and so many other artists off this earth. Like, between 2019 and now, think about how many artists have died. Specifically, hip-hop artists have been killed by poop-putt, nobody dudes that don't do nothing, don't contribute nothing. Then when you look them up, oh, they were aspiring rappers. They were this, that, and the other. They had music videos online. They wanted to rap too. They wanted to be successful. And it's like, now you in jail for the rest of your life because you let your insecurity and jealousy turn into a cancer and make you take humans off this earth? That's crazy to me. But that's most folks. Most folks are navigating with that energy in their spirit. There's an uptick in everything. Uptick in scamming, robbery, murders, all this stuff. Why do you think that is? It's because we're on these apps and we're looking at people living better than us, quote unquote better.
And saying, why am I not getting
why
that?
Why am I not getting that? And why are they special? I'm better than them. I'm whatever, whatever. I'm going to take it now. People in the government aren't helping us. Nobody's helping us. So people are getting to the point where I'm going to take it. If I cannot earn it or get it, I'm going to take it. And we're seeing that all over the United States. L.A. is dangerous as hell now. Like, so many places are like that now. And it's because folks can't, they're hopeless, right? And so I don't, like, as much as I'm frustrated by it, being an artist, on the other side, I understand it because I'm like, I feel hopeless sometimes, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I feel like I've hit a glass ceiling or there's nothing more, and what am I gonna do after that point? And you just have to keep going and keep pushing and build a proper environment around yourself. But that's much easier for me to do than it is the next man, the next woman, this person in this environment or this neighborhood. Like, there's a lot of artists worse off than me, a whole lot. And so it's just like, I get it, dog. I see it. Like, I know people got bills to pay. People got, you know, like, people got kids. People got stuff, and they trying to figure it out. And there's nothing else I can do but this. There's nothing else I can do on this earth but this. And the sad part is, if you're standing in between me and being able to do this the rest of my life, what do I do? And that's the, like, all artists, if you have certain aspirations, know that. They know that, and there's a darkness in this pursuit that is, what do I have to do to get where I'm trying to go? Because I can't do anything else. There are people who can, like, I can't do this and work a job. I can't, like, I have to do this. This is all I am. And at this point, this is all I poured into. So it's not an option of, there's no plan B, no plan C, no plan D. I have to do this and figure out a way to sustain myself as a man, as a human being, for the rest of my life doing this. And so you go after it a certain way, and you're willing to sacrifice and give up and all this other stuff. And a lot of people are like, I'm not going to sacrifice anything. You are. And that's the scary part. For me, I'm always self-sacrificing. But there are people who are not trying to sacrifice anything. They want to have their cake and eat it too.
Oh, especially in showbiz.
It's hell yeah. And so it's like, if I got to take this opportunity from you, if I got to smut your name, if I got to hurt you physically, emotionally, mentally. We see how many people. This movie, Amadeus. Have you seen Amadeus?
Sure.
Exactly. That's. I like.
Salieri, man.
I lived that. Like, and just didn't die. You see what I'm saying? I've lived stuff like that and just haven't died. But metaphorically in my brain, I have. And so for me, I'm on the other side of that. Like, the transition from Don Lifted to Lawrence Matthews is me dying and coming back or whatever as myself. Like, going through all of those experiences and coming out on the other side with a new perspective on my existence and life and the pursuit of happiness, my art, whatever it is. And I'm not gonna let anybody harm me in the ways that people have harmed me in the past, and I'm gonna make sure to protect myself and my art at all costs. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's like a metaphorical way of going into the things, for sure.
You mentioned that you have struggled with anxiety and other mental health issues. Mm-hmm. Aside from cold showers, are you working through that with therapy? Like, how are you addressing that?
So, I want to be in therapy. I'm going to get therapy. There's some issues that are too big for me to work through. I think my relationship with violence as a human, it's the my mortality and my relationship to violence and violent death is something I cannot handle on my own. I need to talk to somebody.
Is that like, you mean like a fear of death?
Fear, yeah. Like, yeah. I think...
death terrifies me.
Yeah. And
I sometimes can't sleep because it's too similar to death.
I feel that. There are times where I, like, am too tired and I go to sleep and then, like, am I dying? Like, it's like a weird thing. It's like, I've never felt this tired before. Am I passing away? And it's a very weird thing. And I think for me, I'm not scared of not being here. I think, and I'm not a Christian. I'm not, like, super religious or anything like that. I recognize all the things, but, like, I know what this is. I know what I'm made of. I know that all of this is the same thing, and I'm a part of it, alive and dead. And going back to the essence of it is not scary to me in that way, right? Because it's space and stardust and all that type of shit.
I will admit that's actually part of it. Like the light, you know, the metaphorical lights going out, that idea scared, and you know, eternity of nothing, that scares the shit out of me.
See, like, all that shit, see, like, there, yes. I'm one of those people who wishes they could go in a black hole. I'm that person. Like, I was like, I want to know so fucking bad what else is there, but I don't want to die. Like, it's like if somebody could send a camera into a black hole and, send us back the information or the waves or whatever, and just say, be like, oh, there's some other shit happening over there. I can be like, yes, I know there's some other weird shit happening.
It's a cliche, but, you know, the blues song, everybody wants to go to heaven.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to die.
Yeah, and that's my thing. Is like, I don't know if I particularly believe in heaven or hell. I don't believe in hell for sure. And I think whatever the other side of this is just some other dimensional type of plane or some shit that we don't understand, because the rules of our makeup physically only go so far. So there could be shit happening around us all right now, and we wouldn't be able to, like, understand it, right? But I think for me, I had started searching, like, through the pandemic, like, I was in the house, because I was so scared. I have asthma, so I was so scared of getting COVID early on and dying. Like, it would have killed me 100%, because when I did get COVID, it whooped my ass, and I'm still dealing with, like, the after effects of what COVID did to, like, my muscles, and, like, just, like, I'm sore in different ways that I've never felt sore before. It's weird.
Oh, that sucks. Long haul COVID, they call that. Yeah,
and I'm I'm hoping that it goes away. Like, I know people with long COVID, and my situation doesn't look like that, so I'm, like, hesitant to call it that. But I know that it had a significant effect on me, because I was, like, in the bed for, like, 4 days. Like, just messed up, couldn't move, couldn't go to the bathroom, couldn't do anything. And I, like, lost a lot of weight, and, like, my memory was fogged. Like, everything was real messed up. I had, like, weird hallucinations. I had a tough time when I was on COVID. When I had COVID, and it was hit, a bunch of other stuff was hitting me at the same time. And so for me, at the top of that's kind of like that started it, like me acknowledging it. But I realized through that process, oh, I've always had this anxiety. And like, as I start to like, so for me, I was straight edge. I had like navigated addiction as a young man, like a young person, like 19, 20, or whatever. And I was like, yeah, I'm cool. I've never had a sip of liquor. I never drank in my life. I don't really smoke. I just never really had did anything. And I had a little window of time where I had like a rough 6 months. And I just, after that, I was like, I'm cool. And so for me, I was always real hesitant to get into weed and stuff like that or whatever. But like, people started, you know, getting me more and more hip to like CBD and Delta 8 and stuff like that. And so I was like, all right, like, you know, it's the pandemic. There's nothing happening otherwise. I can't do anything. There's nothing that's keeping me narrow, if that makes sense. So I was like, I'm gonna try a little CBD and see what works. So I started smoking a little CBD, and I could feel the effects. Once the world started to open up a little bit more, I thought I had figured it out. Like, I was like, okay, I got my anxiety under control. You know, I need to move this way and move that way. But so many aspects of my diet and my, like, life and just living added to that constantly. And then, of course, people are dying left and right, and I'm paying attention to all of it. Like, I'm not one of those people who was just ignoring it. I'm like, oh, 500,000 people have died, 600,000 people died, 700,000 people. And like, people are acting like this is not a lot of people. And my brain is like, I know how many people that is. That's an insane amount of people. And that's doing something energetically when this many people are leaving Earth all around us, and people are not able to properly grieve and all this stuff. Like, I can feel the energy building. And I'm one of these people, I feel all that shit. I feel it.
I bet that was even more intense. Like, I spent most of the pandemic in Chicago, where things were a little more, you know, for lack of a better word, like liberal. And
things were, oh God,
it was more quick to shut down, and people were not, you know, there was nobody was being weird about wearing the mask. I imagine it was
rough here.
It was terrible down here.
It was terrible down here, and it wasn't just like stereotypical people, like you think, oh, the Republican, whatever.
These
doing.
Colors
like,
don't run.
Yeah, it's like, no, it was black folks and white folks and liberal folks, and it was just like, it just, because everybody's superstitious about their own things, and like, depending on where the orders come from, people are like, nah, you know what I'm saying? And like, for me, I was very much big masked up. I didn't get COVID until 2022, and like, I got it from like my partner carrying it. Like, they weren't even sick. And I was just isolated. I had not been around anybody. And, like, they had passed it to me just on a fluke, you know what I'm saying? But I had avoided it that much time because I was really taking this shit seriously. And so, for me, you know, and then it's, like, all the vaccination stuff, that just, it just got worse and worse because just so much misinformation and just, like, nobody really knew what the fuck they were talking about. I think that's where I stand now. It's, like, nobody knows what the fuck they're talking about because none of this shit really mattered. It did what it wanted to do. And, yeah, and so, for me...
And it's still a thing, and we're now just kind of
What are we gonna do? What are we gonna do? What, like, are we gonna, like? Because I wore a mask for three years. And I was like, yo, at what point is me not going outside going to wreck my brain? I have to be a human again, and I caught it, and it kicked my ass. And I'm like, yo, I didn't die. I hope I don't catch it again, but I have to go outside after this. And my rule was, if I make it to my shell show, I'm done or whatever. And so I made it there. I made it through my performance and didn't pass out. And so I'm like, I'm cool now. Like, I'm outside, like, around the people I want to be around. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I think that's one thing. It gave me a lot of discernment about, like, who I want to spend time around. But I think, you know, again, all the death that was happening, all the wild stuff that was happening, you know, politics was out of fucking control in a way that, and I was watching.
I mean, it's not much better now.
Not much better. But I was just, like, watching all of it, like, every day and just riddled with it. And so it was just, like, I started connecting dots with the things I was feeling from things I had maybe experienced as a child in the way that, because, like, it would, my blood pressure, like, I had, like, my blood pressure was a thing, like, my salt content was a thing, so I had to, like, start cutting stuff out of my diet because I was, like, literally feeling like I was gonna have a stroke. And I'm like, yo, I'm, what year is this? I'm 29. I'm like, bro, no, dog. Like, what, why do I feel this bad? My body shouldn't be attacking me this way, this young. And so I started just taking evaluations on what I was consuming media-wise, art-wise, social media stuff. And I noticed that there was an uptick when I was bumping into violent content. And of course, in 2020, 2021, there was a ton of it. All over the place. Police killings, just fucking cops knocking old dudes down and busting it. Like, it was just like, we were just inundated with it in a way that I had never been inundated with it. And those feelings start to connect with stuff that I experienced as a child. And, like, in a very, like actual way, like, dealing with violence as a child and, like, violence in my neighborhood and people around me being violent to me, right? Physically. But
did
then,
you grow up in Memphis?
Yes, I grew up in Memphis. I grew up, like, outside, like Shelby County, so, like, kind of close to Germantown, but I grew up out the way. But I grew up in Memphis, and so it's, like, that part is a part of your upbringing, right? So you know that down the street or whatever, or, you know, 15 minutes away, there's allegedly this energy, right? And that is a part of what you got going on. And that's a part of being a Memphian, is having that energy and that permeating from the place that you live, right? And so that's a thing. But just in general, like, fights and, like, violence and just all these different things happening as you grow up. And I don't think I'm a person who's, like, particularly, like, unsensitive to those things. I think I'm hypersensitive to all those things. And, like, again, like I said before, I feel all that shit. I feel all of it. Shit that don't have nothing to do with me. Like, I've dropped tears over people I had never even, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just hear something happen to somebody and I'm just like, this is absolutely terrible. How could this happen to a human?
You're an empathetic person, man.
I'm a highly empathetic person. Even when I don't understand that I'm being empathetic. Like, it's like, it just hits me in a certain way. And so, all that stuff is going on, all that stuff is happening, and I'm connecting to the stuff with my childhood, and then, like, thinking about some of my first interactions with media and some of the movies that came out when I was a child, and I started connecting, like, oh, I saw Dead Presidents really young, and it scarred me. I saw so many different movies from that, like Black Panthers, and they killed all those folks in those movies, like, and I remember watching, what was that? The movie about Fred Hampton, and I think he got killed in, what, 78 or something like that. But I, like, remember doing the math and being like, that only happened 20 years before I was alive. And it happened so close that that level of violent murder happened to, like, a leader. And just kind of just life kept going in a way. And, like, nobody was, like, nothing happened for that. And it was like, I did the math and I was like, that happened like 20 years before I was here.
We'd like to think of ourselves as very removed from all those, the quote, civil rights era or whatever.
Yeah, no.
That, in a historical perspective, that just happened.
That just happened. And so for me, I'm like, I'm 30. That happened like in my lifetime away from me. And I was like, oh shit. So I started to like really piece together violence and me being a black man and that being compounded trauma that was building in my like physical system since I was a child, since I was a little kid. Like the first black man that I learned about as a child, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King. Oh, well, dad, mom, what happened to them? Oh, where did it happen? Down the street, you know what I'm saying? Like in your city, they blew this man's face off. In your city, they shot Malcolm X all these times. Like, and I hear this man's speeches in my house. And so it's like you're building your icons as a young black man. Oh, my dad's favorite musician is who? Tupac Shakur. What happened to him? What happened to Biggie? Oh, like you start to like every introductory icon that you have.
And what's the status of those cases?
And exactly. What happened with that? And so you start to see that the riots was what, 93, 94?
Yeah.
So I'm a little like I'm a baby, but the energy of it.
I was like 13 maybe when the LA riots happened.
Yeah, I was super young. So it's like you don't know what's happening, but you know there's an energy, and you know that a man that looks like you or your dad or your uncle got beat the fuck up by the police on video. Like you start to see these images, even if you don't understand it. You see all these images, right? You see Malcolm X on the gurney. You see all these things, right? And you see how carelessly the violence against people who look like you is existing. And I'm not even like placing it in its full context yet. I'm a little kid. I'm just seeing people
how
that look like, yeah, like
growing up.
I just see people that look like me in violent contexts, in media, movies, music, like not even video games yet, but just like I'm seeing it in media, in the news and all this stuff, right? So then you grow up, you don't think nothing of it, right? Like, but it all came to like a head in this time period of my life, going into 30, where like I like connected it all. And I was like, oh, and then I started connecting it to like, oh, like the fights that I got into, the ways that people interacted with me because I was a black person or a black queer person or whatever it is. And like with queerness is so funny because like we always joke about like people see it on you before you see it in yourself sometimes. And so it's like you start to connect all these dots about violence that you experienced, and then you're living in a time period that is now hyper violent, and there's, you know, social media and everything that's promoting it and showing it to you because the algorithm reacts to negativity instead of positivity. So it's like, oh, they know you're going to sit and look at that.
If it bleeds, it leads.
Yes. And so it's like the headlines and just everything. And then then you become a musician, right? Well, what's the history of musicians? And you start going through and you're like, I'm early 20s. I'm like, everybody who I watch an interview that feels how I feel about life died, like young. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and you start to be like, well, and then you're depressed. So you start thinking, okay, dealing with suicidal ideations and things like that in your youth. Like I've attempted a few things in my life. So it's like, I've gone through that and I made it. I remember like making it to 27 and being like, all right, I figured it out. Like I did not go. Like I remember turning 28 and being like, all right, I can die now and not be a part of like some early horrible shit that happens to every musician who's like really talented and troubled or whatever, because I felt very talented and troubled. So it's like, I remember when XXX Tentacion died, and like he's a very controversial person, but it's like he how he died, and like Juice WRLD, and just so many people, Mac Miller, it's just like so many people who do what I do are dying in their early 20s, mid 20s, and I'm like gaining, like I'm getting out of that era, so I'm starting to live longer than my favorite genius musicians. And it's like a weird thing. It's like Tupac died at 25.
It's a weird thing to outlive your heroes.
Yes. And it's like you start to see it and you're like, okay, well, I'm clearly, obviously I'm not them. I obviously didn't like, I'm not as successful as them or whatever, so I'm like avoiding certain things. But at the same time, it's like I'm looking at their lives and learning lessons about drug use, about this, about chasing this and this and this and fame and whatever it is. And so I avoid those things. But then it's like, I'm from Memphis though. Memphis is a small knit place, a lot of crab in the barrel mentality. I don't care what anybody wants to say about it not being that, it is. And if you say that it's not, you may be not popping enough to feel it, to be honest with you. And so for me, it's like, if you are popping and you are from here, you feel it and you know it, and you most likely have left. And so I'm one of the people who is like here. you know, for now, but I'm here. And so it's like, I know what that shit feels like for real. And so it's an interesting thing to navigate, and you get scared and you get paranoid. And when, like, I bought, I don't care, it's legal, it's mine, but like, I bought my first firearm 2019, going into 2020, and then like, just off of like, oh, I just came back from tour, and people were moving weird around me. And people knew where I lived, and people were like, the people who had been close to me.
So you felt like you had to get that?
Yeah, I felt like, because I was like, you know, I was like being honest with myself at the time. I was like, man, I ain't been to the gym. I ain't doing this. I ain't doing this. If somebody rolls up on, like, people are not rolling up on you to beat you up. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not doing that anymore. They're rolling up to harm you in different ways, especially if it's not rooted in, oh, I just saw that he has a nice chain or something like that, and I want to take it. It's like, they normally know who you are if they're taking that big of a risk. And they came there to do what they're coming to do. And I had my house broken into a few years prior. And even in that, like, the fear that happens, or like the disruption of your security that happens when your house gets broken into, because I was in my house when it got broken into.
Oh my gosh.
So I was in my bedroom, and I just so happened to lock my door that night. Before that, I had not been sleeping with my door locked. And I know it was multiple people who came in there, and they took a bunch of stuff. And I just remember after that being like severely paranoid. I had nightmares, I had all kinds of stuff. Like, I still sometimes, when my anxiety is bad, which it hasn't been thankfully for a while, but I'll have these dreams where I'm in my house, and it's almost like a zombie movie. Like, people are trying to get in my house through the windows, through the doors, and they're trying to open stuff, and I have to kind of like fend them off or whatever. And if I'm not able to, like, the dream ends or whatever, but like, the dream is me trying to figure out how to keep them from coming in the house. And whenever my anxiety would get bad, I would have those dreams. And so it's like, I had a lot of stuff piling up to this era of time or whatever. And so I think for me, connecting all those dots and then starting to work on it, like, let me knock out the first little gremlin that's my anxiety. Let me figure out how to navigate that. And so for me, I started Googling stuff. CBD was a good start. I started going to like juice bar and getting like the drinks. And I was like, all right, let me start with my health. Let me start going to the gym again, so I feel strong and confident in my body, right?
There is a connection. I've been doing some yoga for the past like year and a half, and it has had a definite effect on my mental outlook as well. Mm-hmm. Like, there is a definite connection between mental and physical health that I didn't fully appreciate until I started.
Yeah, same. I was like, well, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing this or that. Like, I felt like I was, like, you know, thin. I was like, I'm cool. I don't need to do whatever. I play basketball. I was, like, athletic. So I was like, I don't need to do certain stuff. But I was like, I need to feel confident and strong in my body. Started going to the gym. Started, like, you know, just being more active in a different type of way. I recently just got a dog, because, like, dogs, they help with that. So I got a dog. Switched to the cold showers around the COVID time, because they were saying, like, they're good for, like, I don't know, sort like muscle things and, like, just nervous system things. And I felt like my nervous system was really off after COVID and all the stress that I took on. Like, I would, like, blank out sometimes. Like, I couldn't, like, I'd be literally talking to somebody and, like, it would just go blank. And I would be like, what was that? Like, where was I? What was I even talking? And sometimes it happens now, but, like, I'm better, so I can, like, get back there faster before you even notice. But, like, that became a thing that had never become a thing. And there was friends of mine who were also dealing with crazy health stuff, and I was watching, like, them move their diet and change things. Like, I stopped eating beef, or, like, stopped eating red meat, and start doing little things, start knocking stuff out, drinking way, way, way more water, like, just started cutting stuff out to get to the root of what the issue is. And I think even started, like, experimenting with Delta 8 to work through my issues. And, like, I explained to people, like, my brain works, like, I can, like, take apart things in my head. Like, that's how kind of my brain works and solves problems. And so it's like, but it happens really fast. So, like, I like to liken it to if I could take apart a refrigerator in front of you with my mind and put it back together. Like, that's how I think about it. But it happens really fast. What Delta 8 does is it allows me to take apart an issue or an issue, and then look at all the little pieces and parts of it. And so if it's a refrigerator, I can go, oh, look at this screw. look at all the ways it is built, look how it's shaped together and how it fits directly into this thing, and that helps this thing and this thing. It slows the process down for me, right? And so I started doing that and then intentionally exploring issues within myself, things that I had problems with, things that I felt fear about or whatever, or just like things that I couldn't gain any ground on. And I would like take some Delta 8, put some media on, music, a movie or something that explored some of those issues with like love or, you know, parenthood or whatever, just like these things that I had like stress about or whatever. And I would explore it and I would break it down and I would come out of it different. Like I would come out of it with some grand understanding and
almost
I would just,
like a spirit quest or
yes,
something. Yeah.
Yes. And I'm, you know, I want to eventually like experience mushrooms, because that was a thing too, like learning about magic mushrooms and like but in a therapy context, not just in like I just want to party. It's like,
yeah,
I don't want to do no nothing to just party. I'm trying to figure some things out and advance my mind so I can be the best version of myself, so I can just be a dope human. And then also, if I'm going to bring humans into this world, I would like to do it at least from some place of understanding, so I don't fuck them up how I might have got fucked up in different ways, or that the world fucked me up. I want to be able to protect them and as much as I can and be prepared for it as much as I can. And I don't want to like again, the anger thing. Like, my dad had a short fuse. My dad was in the military. He's a certain type of guy. He has not dealt with his own traumas and experiences and the violence that he experienced in his life at all. He thinks he's fine. I'm like, yo, you should maybe go to therapy, whatever. He's like, I'm fine. And then he'll describe to me the most violent and horrendous thing that a family member did to another family member in front of him, and he just acts like shit's cool. And I'm like, dude, that's bad, dawg. Like, you need to do something about that. And he won't. And that has affected how he's shown up in my life and my brother's life. And I don't want to do that to my kids. I want my kids to like, I want me and my kids to be like this. You know what I'm saying? Like, really close. And so for me, I would like to try these things that help me get to a healthier mental space and emotional space, because I lack patience sometimes. And I don't want to react to my child or my dog or my cats or my partner or whoever it is, because I learned that from him and he learned that from his dad and he learned that dad. I don't want to pass that on.
It's a hard thing not to. I mean, my father's no longer, he's dead, but you know, he had it awful from his dad, way worse than he was to me.
Yeah, it's always like that. Yeah,
and even though like I'm still working on like getting to the place of forgiveness with my dad and stuff.
Same.
But like, I'm at least coming to some understanding of why things were the way they were.
Mm-hmm.
And that has helped.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Like, I did that. Like, I went through that. And, like, I understand it. But, like we don't really talk right now or whatever. And I thought we were going to get to a better place. But me coming out killed that. Like, it completely killed that or whatever. And so, like, the way that I've rationalized it in this moment is, like,
old school military, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And just Christian. He grew up a certain type of way, and like, he's not willing to yield or understand that the things he might believe in might not be true, or they're shaped in ways that give him certain understandings of the world. And I think me growing up the way I grew up in the time period that we grew up, we have access to information. Whereas, like, they didn't have access to information. So it's like, whatever your mom and your dad told you or your pastor told you was a fact and it's true. And it's like, dude, there's so much more to existence than however many pages are in that book. And that is coming from a skewed and warped perspective. And you have to understand that. And he's, like, in complete denial about it. So we can't even have a conversation about humanness, because he believes everything that has ever been done or important it exists in that space.
Yeah.
And I am very
much, humanity is 2,000 years old.
Exactly.
Or
yeah.
Right,
it's
right.
Like, no, the fuck it's not. And so it's like, for me being a science person and like being in doubt, like, I'm just like, no, dude. And I'm not trying to like disrespect it. But at the same time, like, I understand all of it. I understand the history of all of it. But let's say it's history, and he doesn't treat it that way. And so we butt heads. And I think with me navigating my queerness and all that stuff and coming out specifically to him, it just broke it. And I think there was an opportunity where we could have navigated it healthily, and I was hoping that it was going to be that. And I think, I don't know, 24 hours, 48 hours went by, and it just, something happened, and it won't be navigated that way. And so the way that I probably unhealthily rationalized it is, yeah, I got a dad, but I don't got no dad. Like, it's like, I have a dude that has my name. You know, he's a junior. I'm third. He has my name. He looks like me. But outside of that, like, it's like, and I mean, my parents divorced when I was in middle school. I'm 31 years old at this point. They divorced. What's middle school? 12? Like, yeah, it's like 11, 12, 13. Come on, dog. I've spent more time not with you than with you at this point. And so I've had to figure all this shit out on my own, dog. Like, I don't need you. I would like for you to be here and for us to have that relationship, because I think it would be better for both of us in the long term. I think as you exit this life, you would like to have that, but maybe you don't. Maybe you value whatever's in that fucking book more than you value navigating this. And so for me, if that's the case, then I'll figure this out. I'll take my ass to therapy and I'll do the things I need to do to become a more whole person. So when I bring somebody into this earth, I don't dump that shit on them. You know what I'm saying? And so for me, when I talk about like all the things that I've been doing, the one thing I haven't been able to grab quite a hold of is that anger and that impatience, but it's directly connected to him, which is directly, it's like an umbrella thing. And it's like Kendrick on the new album, he has like the song like Daddy Issues or whatever. And like he talks about that. Like that's a term that we normally throw at women. But it's like so many of us men have dad issues. Like motherfucker.
I'll cop to it.
Yeah, we all got that shit. If not more than them. If like our whole existences are based in some of that shit. Whether you had a cool dad or not. Like that shit makes all the difference in the world. And so for me, understanding that and learning that, because again, I also, the house I live in is the house I grew up in. My parents divorced, my mom got remarried, and I kept the house, and I have the house now or whatever. And so that's where I live. And so I live in this very weird Synecdoche, New York type of like overlapping existence over myself. And so I spend a lot of time with self and my upbringing and these things. And as I turn 30, I'm like, I'm now turning the ages that my parents were when they had me type of shit. Like, it's starting to overlap. Oh, I sleep in this bedroom. Yeah, it's different here now, but this is the bedroom that I might have been conceived in. It's like these things start to happen and you start to spend time with you as a person who may be in the space where you're possibly going to bring somebody into the world, but you were also being brought in the world in this space. And so you start to just cycle through it and you're like, okay, I need to fix some of these things that are missing, and I need to be able to go to therapy to truly talk to somebody about the things that I experienced in terms of violence, and then also like my dad's connection to that and all of this stuff, and like the stories I heard growing up and the things I experienced, because I have realized that it's like, oh, I can't work through that on my own. And so for me, I think I'm trying to get to like the place financially so I can be able to navigate that, because again, I'm not only just going in there to talk to somebody just, you know, in a very like stereotypical therapeutic way. It's like, I'm a black person, I'm a queer person, I grew up in the South, and all of these intersections create a very unique experience that I need to talk to somebody who understands that, right? Somebody who's not gonna like section off my identity in different ways and stereotype it in one direction or another. Like, this is a very unique experience, but it's also a very universal experience. And so I need somebody who can like appreciate the uniqueness, but then speak to the universality of it all and be like, you're not the only person dealing with this thing. You're not the only person. And if you don't, if you have certain ideas about gender, if you have certain ideas about sexuality or race or religion or whatever it is,
if you're
we're
bringing
gonna clash.
The book with you,
we're gonna clash. Yeah. And so I have to find that, but that is finance, right? Like, there is online options, but everybody I know who falls into the same intersections as me is like, yeah, no, that sucked. That I hated that. I hated this. BetterHelp, whatever.
Even as a straight white guy, it was not easy for me find a therapist that I jived with.
Uh-huh.
Like, it was, you know, I had one in Memphis that I enjoyed all right, but, you know, didn't really help me.
Yeah.
It took until I really bottomed out in Chicago, and my therapist that I still see who's based in Illinois is who really helped me get my shit together. But, yeah, finding the right one, it's hard. My wife has been looking for a therapist here for 6 months since we moved, and she still can't find one.
And see, my brain is like,
she can't even get them. Some of them won't even call her back.
Yeah, and that's my thing. It's like, I know that it ain't going to be here. I know that much. And so with me, like, traveling more and possibly relocating or whatever it is, like, I think
I'll... Are you thinking about leaving Memphis? I don't mean to derail you.
I think I'm going to have to. And I'll always be back and forth. I want to raise my family here, and I want to have a house here. I want to have multiple houses here. But I think for what I need to do in the next stage of my career, I cannot be bound to one place. And I think me being bound and feeling that it, like, feeling like I have some responsibility as a Memphian to stay here and make some things happen has been a detriment to me physically, mentally, and emotionally. Because again, if you talk about trying to find a good therapist, well, try to find a good manager and a good this and a good that and a good PR and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, you can't. And so you end up outsourcing everything to everywhere else. But then, like, because you can't properly build those relationships with those people because you're not based in LA or not based in New York or Chicago or wherever, it's like, you're just a client and you get treated like a client. And I don't want that. I want to have a personal relationship with my manager and my PR and my whatever. And so again, like, after like the split with Fat Possum or whatever, I got rid of everything. I don't have any manager, I don't have any booking, I don't have any, I got rid of everything.
Wow.
To start over completely, because the people who had supported me in the past either couldn't support me in the ways that I needed to, or they just viewed it a different way. We just had a different understanding of how we want to do things. And so I'm definitely in this space now where I want everybody who comes on to, like, understand what the grand vision of it is and look at it from a world perspective and not just like this place. And I think, yeah, I'm always of this place. I don't exist without this place. This place is made and shaped me, and in ways that has protected me and hardened me in a way where nothing can break me elsewhere, right? But at the same time, I don't
think... It can hold you back if you let it.
Yeah. And I don't think... I don't want to be... I think the hardness that it has created is something that I don't want to make me jaded. And I have gone through eras of being jaded as an artist, and, or just towards everything. And I don't want to be that. And I just don't want to be that. And I think the more time I spend away, the better I feel about the potential of my future as an artist and the people who... want to support. Like, I mean, all through 25i, that was a national album. Like, the people who were supporting me were all from not this place. Yeah. And, like, to this day, I mean, we talk about, like, Don Lifter, right? And the potential for it and da-da-da-da. It's like, Memphis isn't in the top 30 streaming cities for Don Lifter music. It's not. And it's like, I live here. I do my shows here, like, and I do, like, good numbers. People come out to my shows like that, but it's not enough demographics-wise.
Do you think some of that is because you don't deliver what people think of as Memphis
Absolutely.
Rap?
Absolutely. And that affects me nationally as well, too. Because when
they want you to sound like Project
Pat
or something.
They want you to sound like that. They want you to sound like...
Nothing against Project Pat.
I love Project Pat. Like I love all of these folks. That's the thing. I am that and Radiohead and blah, 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 and Jimi Hendrix and this band and that band and this artist or whatever. I listen to everything, and I'm... an embodiment of that, of everything that you hear in my music. Even if you listen to, like, the new record, which is, like, very much more hip-hop, you're gonna hear Jay-Z influence in there, you're gonna hear Andre 3000 influence in there, you're gonna hear all kinds of stuff, Pimp C influence in there, like Kendrick Lamar, all these folks that you're gonna hear everything, because I consume it all and I respect it all. And so for me, you know, yeah, I'm not... As much as I represent Memphis maybe doesn't always feel like I am representative of Memphis demographically, right? But then also, like, nationally or whatever, it's like, people are not like, oh, yeah, that makes sense or whatever. But it's crazy, and I'll say this, like, it's crazy, because, again, I've been doing a lot of research. Like, I'm always doing a lot of research on Memphis music and Delta blues music and Southern music, especially working on this last project and channeling a lot of that energy into the music. And I'm going to send you some of that after we leave here if you're in town.
Yeah, please.
I'm doing something about it. I'm going to send it to you. But I've been spending a lot of time with Southern narratives and music and stuff. And I'm like, dude, y'all don't know y'all history, because I am 100% working in the tradition of these people. Like, the Fat Possum artists, the Memphis artists, whatever. Oh, like
there was a time at which all of them sounded like something that no one had heard before.
Yeah. And so it's like, for me, and they still do, like, you go back and listen to that stuff, like, you watch YouTube videos to talk about, like, Memphis rap sigils and all this stuff, and, like, they play those songs, and they're haunting and atmospheric and all this other stuff. What is my music as Don Lifted sounded like? I'm pitching my voice down, it's Chop the Screw influences, all that stuff is dark, it's a certain energy, and I wasn't growing up listening to that stuff. So where did that come from? It's in us, it's in this place. There's nobody from here who music sounds like anybody else's music. Even if you are just siloed out like I was in the suburbs, siloed away from everything, only hearing this stuff in passing, I listened to, like, because I was like a little snob or whatever when I was a kid. I was listening to like conscious rap and like rappity rap and like stuff that I thought was like more intelligent than like more trap influenced stuff or whatever. Like, unless it was like T.I. who's like really rapping, it was like I looked down on that stuff when I was a young dude or whatever. And then to get older and then listen to my own music and like from a grown perspective and be like, this feeds us, the soil here feeds this stuff. And so when I listen to Burnside and I listen to all these folks, like from before, the Fat Possum folks and like just people, High Records people, there's connections and links to people that I'd never even heard as a child, but now I'm introduced to, and I hear it in my music, I hear it in their music, I hear it in these other folks' music. And it's something about being in the South, and particularly particular Memphis, Tennessee, that feeds us a certain type of way. And like for me, I don't think I ever want to create outside of here. I might be back and forth, right? But when I record, I want to be here, I want to feel that energy, I want it to like, I want it to work through me as I'm making my music, and then I go elsewhere, you know what I'm saying? But that's definitely what this album that I'm working on, I'm finishing in terms of like mixing and mastering and stuff, sample clearances and stuff, is it's the channeling of all of that energy. It's like from my whole life, and then specifically the last few years of me like raising quote unquote a national prominence or whatever, like people looking at me a certain way, because I always felt like I was just a local dude, but at the same time I like knew that I wasn't. But
Memphis has a way of keeping you grounded that respect.
Yeah, and the way that they ground you isn't always the most friendly way.
Yeah,
and that, I think that's the thing too, is like when I talk about all the things, it's like people want to keep you in your place, you know, like me getting a Fader feature and doing different things that like folks haven't been able to do here. It's like, then you go out into the world and like you see the people who are like saying the funny little comments and the funny little things. You get into South by Southwest or whatever it is, and like that particular year was only two of us from Memphis who were represented, and I think it was only two of us. And so it's like when you see that, it's like I'm in a small selection of people who are doing this thing from here. And the things that I'm experiencing is very interesting to be experiencing it. And thankfully, I learned the lessons that I need to learn with my life. You know what I'm saying? Knock on whatever. And I hope to continue to have my life. And I want to live a long, long life. Because so many people who have dealt with depression and stress and anxiety, suicidal ideations and things like that, mental health-wise, and then also been an artist and also been in from a small town or whatever, don't. And so I am hell-bent on existing for a while, you know what I'm saying, and seeing some things through of my own hand and the world as well. And so yeah, I don't know, I'm not gonna let anything, like I feel so in control, and not in like a negative way, I just feel very positive about my emotional and mental health right now in a way that I never have in my whole entire life. And like, it's so interesting, we've been trying to talk for a while, and like there's been moments where we might be interacting, but I was like going through, like I think the last time we were at the Crosstown, the vinyl joint, I was going through it in that moment or whatever, and like thinking about the podcast and like thinking about talking about mental health and stuff like that. I was like, I really want to talk to JD, because I'm like, I'm going through some stuff and I would like to tell somebody. And it's like now I'm still going through stuff, but my mind is different in a way where I'm handling it in the most healthy capacity and not in a detrimental way or a detrimental way to others. And like, I feel super like blessed and thankful to be in this space, and I'm gonna continue to keep evolving in that space until I reach what like I'm calling myself like my happy me. And like, I know happy is like an emotion. Like, it's not a state of being. It's an emotion. And, like, but there's the goal I'm looking for, and I feel like I can get there sooner than later. Like, I'm much, much better off now than I was 6 months ago, 6 years, or not 6 years, 6 years, 6 months, 6 weeks, whatever it is. Like, I'm so much more in a better space, and I'm going to continue that growth. And, like, the next time you talk to me, I'm going to be better than I am in this moment, hopefully. And then I'm going to continue that because, like, I've made that a goal just as much as I've made being a successful musician a goal. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're doing well. Thank you. There's nothing you can tell me about when this music is going to see the light of day?
Let me see. So my goal for the first single is April. That's all I'm gonna say.
Okay.
That's all I'm gonna say. When it gets going, it'll get going, and it's not gonna stop for a little while. So expect music from me for the next few years for sure. Like, every year for the next few years, you're gonna get music from me. Like, I'm sitting on a lot of ideas and a lot of music. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, I hope we do this again. I hope we talk again in April.
Hell yeah. Fuck yeah. Hell yeah. I'm down. Just, you know what's up. Just text me. I appreciate you for having me on here. This is nice. Like, I don't get to do this.
This is really fun.
Yeah, no, I love doing this. I love talking and figuring the things out and talking through the things.
Me too. That's why I started a podcast.
Yes, and I am very tempted to start one, but I'm like, nope, I need to focus on some things first.
Well, if you get there and you want to join the network or something,
oh, shit,
let's do it.
Yeah, I'm going to figure. I'm figuring out the things. We're going to decide. I want to figure out what I want to say.
Okay.
I want to figure out what I want to say and how I want to say it. So, yeah. But
one thing at a time.
Yes. But thank you for having me on here.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Lawrence Matthews.
Gang,
FKA
gang.
Don.
Gang,
Don
gang,
Lifton.
Gang. All right. Thank you.
That's the show. Thank you to Lawrence Matthews, FKA Don Lifted. Thank you to Harry Knititsiotis and Midtown Con. Thank you to engineer Eric Wilson, and thank you for listening. Our opening theme is Arthur with two H's, and our closing theme is Joey Pegram of Shabadoo. And for music, news, episode archives, and other fine podcasts, visit backtothelight.net. Until next time, take care, y'all. Part of the Back to the Light podcast network at backtothelight.net.